WBAI New York, and on the internet at WBAI.org. It is 5 a.m. The program you just heard, Labrys with Haptah Selassie, will be back next week at 2 a.m. following the work of the Midnight Ravers. It is time for Back of the Book. Stay tuned. Police.
Hello, this is Radio's Uncle Sidney. When I'm out and about, folks comes up to me and says, "You should be ashamed." But when they calms down, they says how much they loves WBAI. That's WBAI New York and WBAI.org. Back in the day, we had commentaries by Malcolm X, Ayn Rand, Abby Hoffman, and William F. Buckley Jr. Imagine them folks in the same room at the same time. Nowadays, we've got Bob Fass, the founder of the Feast. Amy Goodman, you know her, we got her. Michio Kaku, the smartest guy in the world. Shows that helps you not to get evicted. Top of the line news and interviews. Insane artists and musicians. All okay, okay. We went nuts for a while back there. But now we're okay. We're like your crackhead cousin that's making good. So we know you're pulling for us. Go, go, run right now to WBAI.org and look around. See where we've gone. You can even subscribe online. Believe me, you'll be glad you did. Stay tuned.
It's probably about 5 a.m., and you're listening to All We Still Have George Santos to Kick Around Radio, WBAI New York.
No, I know we're not in Kansas.
Well, good goddamn morning. How the hell are you? This is WBAI New York. The program is Back of the Book. My name is R. Paul Martin. She is Radio's Pickles of the North. Good morning, my dear.
Good morning to you, my dear, and a hearty hello to our dear 19 listeners, wherever they may be.
And we're going to talk about a few things here on this program. You can find out a little bit more about those things by going up to my website at glib.com, glib.com. When you get there, you'll see a blue navigation frame on the left side of your screen. At the top, it will say latest Back of the Book program links. Click on that and you'll get to the web page for this morning's radio program. This is our 154th pandemic episode of Back of the Book. It's pre-recorded. This program was recorded on Friday for airing on Saturday morning. If things have happened between then and when you're hearing this program, we won't be referencing them on this program. A recorded program is not as up-to-date as a live program, but this is what we have to do in these dangerous times. The top story in the multiverse and several different dimensions for this past week is: we are still holding at the huge number of 123 followers on Twitter or X or whatever the hell else they're calling it this week. The next regular WBAI local station board meeting will be held on Wednesday, November 8th at 7 p.m. That meeting will be held on Zoom, even though Zoom compromises privacy and security. This will be the last meeting of the 12th WBAI Local Station Board. The WBAI Local Station Board held an executive session meeting this past Monday, October 30th, and the official report out is, quote, "The WBAI LSB met in executive session to discuss confidential personnel issues related to the evaluation of WBAI management personnel," unquote. That's about all I can say about it. As has been traditional, I guess, the CDC website isn't giving us all that much information about COVID-19 in America, although they are saying that total deaths in America are up to 1,151,435, which means that 1,316 people have died of COVID-19 since our last program a week ago, which is a little bit less than the weekly total for our last program. And I will note that I finally got my autumn COVID-19 booster and flu vaccinations this past week. So,
yay!
So I join Radio's Pickles of the North in being fully vaccinated, although it's going to take like 2 weeks before they're, you know, fully there. But yeah, I'm all vaccinated up here, and that's a good thing. I will take my annual opportunity to rail against the changing of the time. Yes, daylight saving time ends tomorrow morning at 2 o'clock Sunday morning. It suddenly becomes 1 o'clock Sunday morning. Some of us have to run around and set the clocks back and all of that. Oh, boy. I remember how that used to work when I was in grammar school in the autumn. You know, the kids would be back to school and all of that. And in those days, it happened, I think it happened in either September or October. It wasn't November, I don't think, back then. And, oh boy, some kids, you would get there for Sunday Mass, because I was at Catholic school and they forced us all to go to church every Sunday morning. The 9 o'clock Mass at St. Francis Xavier's Church was reserved for the kids who attended the St. Francis Xavier School. And so we all had to line up. It was a Catholic school, of course, so we all had to line up in a specific order outside the church and stand there and wait for the people who had gone to the 8 o'clock Mass to come flooding out. And meanwhile, the teacher would be taking our attendance and making sure we were all there. And, oh, boy, yeah, you better not miss Mass. Oh, boy, you really get nailed for that the next day. And so we were all there, and we would show up, and some kids would say, oh, it was here an hour ago, because his parents had forgotten to set the clock back. And so he showed up at 8 o'clock. And sometimes a kid would go to the 8 o'clock Mass and say, well, I went to church. I'm not going twice, which isn't exactly the attitude they love in a Catholic school.
And then the parents would say when the kid gets home, all right, who said Mass? Who gave the homily? Who was the altar boy serving?
Actually, the kids wouldn't know who the sky pilot was, at least early on. Now, later on, yeah, we would get to know who the hell they were. And we also probably knew mostly who the altar boys were because they were our classmates. Yeah, it's interesting when you go up. In those days, you would go up and you would kneel down. And this was also lined up in a very orderly way. And you would line up and you would go and kneel down on this little pad right by the altar, because they had to have a pad because you couldn't. They said, we can't have people, especially old people, kneeling down on their bony knees on the marble part of that comes off the altar there. So there's a little, you know, 3-inch thick pad, and you would be there. And I remember being there, and you stuck your tongue out and opened your mouth, and the kid with whom I was having sex was the altar boy, so he'd seen me in that pose before.
Oh, jeez.
Yeah.
And the lightning and the fire and brimstone came down upon you.
Well, it would have come down more on him, I suppose, since, you know, he was an altar boy. I said, oh, I can't be an altar boy. I tried to be a choir girl for a while, but, you know, I dropped out of that. But, yes, so we had that going on where the kid I had sex with was the altar boy, and we're both saying, oh, boy, here we are.
Oh, boy, the two of you having committed not a venial sin,
not a
tiny sin, mortal sin,
yeah.
And assisting the priest and you receiving communion.
Well, I didn't receive communion if I hadn't been to confession before. I didn't do that because, you know, that's a sacrilege, and you go, you know, the ground opens up and you descend directly into a fiery hell. That's what we were told. So, yeah, I would go. But that would also mean I would spend time not going to communion. And not only did they write down whether or not you attended church, they wrote down whether or not you attended communion. And in the seventh grade, oh boy, did I ever get castigated for not receiving communion. Oh, yeah, Brother DePaul saying, Mr. Martin, you haven't, you've been going to church, but you haven't been receiving communion. Why is that? Oh, I don't know. I couldn't get around to going to confession. You have to go to confession. You can't keep this up. Look at how many months it's been. It had been months and months. And so, yeah, I couldn't tell him I was, engaging in prohibited activities with the altar boy. So,
boy, try going to confession when your parents like to hang out with the parish priests and have them over for tea and all this stuff. So they know all the children of their friends. You know, my father was a warden. My mother was a church lady. She was in the women's club and everything. So they knew who each of us were.
Yeah. Well, I didn't have that.
It's the four of the North children. Oh, what have they been up to?
Yeah, it's pretty bad stuff when you really come down to think of it. And, yeah, because I had at one point gone to confession when they took everybody and forced us all in during a school day. Because I, for whatever reason, sometimes the teacher would decide, we're all going to confession right now. And he brought everybody over there. And one time, and I think it was also in the seventh grade, this might have been what ended my my long term of not going to going to communion. You go in there, and I spent like 25 minutes in the confessional. Most kids, they kneel there, and, you know, 2 or 3 minutes, and the priest says, okay, say some, say a couple of Hail Marys or an Our Father and three Hail Marys and stuff like that. I'm in there confessing to engaging in certain activities, impure acts with another boy. That's the way to put it. And, I was getting castigated in there and told how I was going to hell and this is terrible.
Why did you tell them that?
You had to.
Oh, my God.
That was the indoctrination. You had to tell them this stuff.
Well, I know what the indoctrination is. I went through it myself. But, man, I mean, I never had anything that spectacular to confess. I mean, I was in the group where I got to start making something up because I, I was such a little mouse. I just, I yelled at my mother.
Miss Goody Two Shoes is here again.
I yelled at my brother. I threw a book at my brother. One of my brothers, it's like it was that level of stuff. Oh, I ate a bag of chips when I was supposed to. And that's like in the seventh grade. I was still confessing crap like that. I mean, because I had nothing exciting.
We had different confessions.
Oh, my God. Jeez, I'm surprised they didn't haul you off to a boarding school for boys, wayward boys or something.
Well, they're not allowed to violate the confessional stuff. So,
do you believe that they did not? They probably didn't say anything to your parents, or you would have ended up someplace upstate.
Well, yes, in those days, I believed that they did that. You buy the stuff. You're a kid. I mean, what am I, seventh grade? I'm 12. So, and I've been brought up for the previous half of my life in the Catholic Church and believing all this nonsense. And so when they say they don't violate the seal of the confessional, we completely believed all of that. Anyway, they kept feeding us stories, and it was all very religious, and Dog Spelled Backwards was watching us. And these days I wonder if in some of those times when I was receiving communion and the altar boy was my sex partner, I wonder if the priest might have been gay, too. That would have been interesting. You know, a gay priest giving me communion while he has the gay altar boy with him, and oh boy.
Well, that actually, that could have made it either worse or better with in terms of understanding, you know.
Oh, those people did not understand.
Yeah, I guess that's true.
It didn't matter. If they were, they probably were worse on you. But, yes, so that was some of my lovely time in grammar school, going to church on the Sunday morning of standard time, kicking back in again.
So do you blame Benjamin Franklin for all of this?
Why Benjamin
Franklin?
Because
I believe he came up with the idea of changing time.
Oh, well.
No, not for the Catholics.
Oh, I was wondering if he was a Protestant. How did he get to church to have confessions? What?
You having to go to Mass early, an hour.
Well,
early.
The thing is, they also gave us daylight saving time, which is nice and which I like, and which if they did make it permanent in the United States, I would be glad about that.
So he was the one who actually began that, I think.
He started pushing it, I think. I think he was, but it was not until, what was it, 1880-something?
I could look in the great big book of knowledge from the New York Public Library here.
Well,
oh my God,
let's hear.
This is a heavy book.
From the Book of Knowledge.
Now, but you know what? What is this? The Science Desk reference. That was a great purchase. This book is like almost 30 years old. It's like 28 years old now.
I remember you getting that, don't I?
Yeah, but some of it is still good. And they call it Daylight Savings with an S.
Oh, they're wrong. Oh, boy, the science stuff. The science book has got it wrong. It's saving.
Well, I don't know. I do not know. This is what the New York Public Library thinks should be. Did I say New York Times? I meant New York Public Library. This is a great big reference book that they have. Let's see. It was first originally proposed by Benjamin Franklin to extend the daylight hours later into the evening. Huh. Interesting.
Well, yeah, so he made daylight saving time.
Yeah.
And then people said we have to go backwards on that.
Yeah,
the farmers don't like it.
Huh. Well, in 1967, the Uniform Time Act went into effect in the United States, and everybody had to observe the saving of the time.
Not everybody.
Well, any state may exempt itself by law, so it says. So there's a bunch of them.
And there are parts of states that do that.
Yeah. Well, back when this book was written, Arizona, Hawaii, part of Indiana, Puerto Rico, the Virgin Islands, and American Samoa exempt. But, and there's modified local zone boundaries in Alaska, Florida, Kansas, Michigan, and Texas. Oh, man.
Yeah, let's have things be uniform. You know, it's the 21st century.
I know. And then they extended it here during the energy crisis.
Yes, I remember that. That was good because then we had daylight saving time all year long, and that was so much better, in my opinion.
Well, and it's been extended since then because it used to be the last weekend in October, right? They go back to
it was September or October, somewhere in there.
Yeah.
And that they would go back to standard time. But, yeah, now it's November and
yeah, I think it pretty much you go back to standard time a week later and you start the saving time a week earlier than what it normally been, but
and as I said, the farmers just don't like daylight saving time, but screw them.
Whoa! Well, now the farmers, who feeds us? It's the farmers.
They don't feed us. They try to make money selling us food or selling some company raw materials to make food like substances out of. But the deal is we know what we're going to be eating pretty soon.
Silent breed is people!
At this point, I should say that this is WBAI New York. The program is back of the book. She is Radio's Pickles of the North, and I'm R. Paul Martin. As we noted at the top of the program, yeah, George Santos is still in place, sitting in his ill-gotten seat in Congress. God damn. Yeah, he wasn't thrown out of Congress this week. And the vote to expel him needed a two-thirds vote, and the proposal failed by a mere majority of 213 to 179. Of course, the Republicans mostly need every vote they can get, and this new Speaker of the House, Mike Johnson creature, homophobic cretin that he is, he wants to keep Santos, who is gay, in the House because he needs this guy's vote. And I suppose he gets it now that he's, you know, come out in favor of keeping the lying sack of bleep in there. And so, yeah, so he didn't get thrown out. I sort of agree that they should wait until he gets convicted of something before they throw him out. But I bet that if a Democrat were in the same situation, the current crop of Republicans would all vote to kick him or her out. I have no doubt about that because, hey, fairness, they've never heard of it. The Trump family's fraud trial. Ah, the family that defrauds together, goes to prison together. The Trump family's fraud trial in Manhattan Supreme Court is still going on. Co-defendants Donald Trump Jr. and Eric Trump testified this past week, and daughter Ivanka Trump testifies next week. Jr. testified that it was all the fault of the professionals they'd hired. He does not seem to be opposing the idea that a fraud was committed, just that it was someone else who was responsible for it, not him. The other executive vice president of the Trump Organization, Eric Trump, testified that he didn't know, quote, anything, unquote, about his father's financial statements until the New York Attorney General brought the case to trial. And then Assistant Attorney General Andrew Ammer presented evidence showing that former Trump Organization controller Jeff McConney had in fact informed Eric Trump of the statements a decade ago when they were talking about figures to value the family's Seven Springs property. So the assistant attorney general asked Eric Trump, quote, so you did know about your father's annual financial statements as of August 20th, 2013, didn't you? Unquote. And Eric Trump replied, quote, it appears that way, yes, unquote. So Ammer follows up with, quote, and he told you that he needed to value Seven Springs for that annual financial statement, right? Unquote. Eric's reply was, quote, that's what it says, yes, unquote. A lot of quotes in there. So the attempt to weasel out on that charge failed. The Trump Organization controller had previously testified that Eric was the one who directed him to account for seven non-existent units that the Trump Organization had planned to build but never did at the Seven Springs property when calculating its value, boosting its worth by $161 million. It's stuff like that which had made the judge rule that they were all guilty of fraud before the trial had even started. I mean, it's so obvious doing things like that. Pretty blatant stuff. Meanwhile, Donnie Bonespur Trump continues to verbally assault the judge in the case outside of the courtroom. Oh boy, at some point, somebody's going to snag him. And he's had all these people flip on him. And I think he's looking a little more worried than he had been, because some of these things that are going against him aren't just civil trials. They're not just going to result in big fines. They're going to result in him being convicted. And convicted is a problem for him. Although he'll use it as a badge of honor. Thing is, if he goes to prison, can he get himself out of prison if he's reelected? I don't know. I wonder. Of course, the good thing would be if he gets convicted and is put in prison and does not get reelected, and we have him in prison probably for the rest of his life. Oh, that would be so good. So this past Tuesday's Science Times had a number of articles that I found interesting. One of them, written by Alicia Haridasani Gupta, is titled Iron Deficiency Often Undiagnosed. And it says roughly 35% of women of reproductive age in the United States don't have sufficient amount of iron in their bodies. This can have effects on things in your body from immunity to cognition, and it often goes undiagnosed. And it isn't just women, because I got diagnosed with iron deficiency anemia years ago. Oh gosh, that was what was that? Seritan? There was, there used to be a commercial, but on TV, and they had these commercials. It was for, I believe it was for Seritan. It was one of those things. You had Seritan, you had Geritol, which I gave to my male ex when he turned 35, because back then the idea was, oh, 35, you're middle-aged, you're getting old, you need a boost. And so they would advertise Geritol, because Geritol, you're old at 35, and a lot of people were, and so that was one thing. But I think it was Seritan, which is nature's spelled backwards, you're supposed to take for iron deficiency anemia, and that used to be one of the commercials on TV. And so they used to push that stuff, and oh man, I had it, or I have it. And I have to take this rather bothersome pill. It really doesn't do nice things to my gut, but I have to take it. So I join these women, these, what, 35% of women of reproductive age in having iron deficiency anemia. My first girlfriend, the evil Morlab, used to now and again say to me, R. Paul, you're such a girl. So this proves it. In the article, Dr. Malcolm Monroe, professor of obstetrics and gynecology at the David Geffen School of Medicine, says that the iron deficiency is often overlooked, and it might come down to, quote, the normalization of women's disorders, unquote. And the associated symptoms like feeling faint, fatigued or irritable are often seen as a part of life as a woman, he added. Well, there I go. I'm still such a girl. And so, you know, iron isn't just used for hemoglobin. It's used for a whole bunch of functions inside your body. And what isn't in the hemoglobin generally is stored in the bone marrow and liver as a protein called ferritin. And when your iron stores dip, when you have anemia, iron deficiency anemia, the iron is redirected to the maintenance of red blood cells at the expense of heart, the brain, and muscular functions. So, yeah, it's a serious damn thing, and it can really mess you up, and oh, boy. And it notes in the article that the symptoms of iron deficiency are often nonspecific and nebulous, including shortness of breath, brain fog. Wait, what was I saying? I can't remember. Oh, lightheadedness, increased sensitivity to cold temperatures and heart palpitations. Well, at least I don't have heart palpitations, I think. And Dr. Angela Wayand, a pediatric hematologist at the University of Michigan Medical School, says it is also associated with anxiety, depression, sleep disturbances, and even heart failure. Oh, boy. So I got a bunch of junk I got to watch out for here. And the article goes on to say, a study published this year found that an estimated 17% of women and girls up to age 21 were iron deficient. Dr. Wayand, who was a co-author of the study, said that when the data was analyzed using a higher threshold of ferritin of 50 micrograms per liter, 77% of menstruating women were deemed iron deficient. What's happening is there's a debate right now over what the proper levels of iron should be, mostly in women, but in everybody. And so there was a lower rate, and now the thing is they're saying, well, maybe it's a lot more than 35% of women who are of menstruation age who are iron deficient. Maybe it's 77%, which is going to be gigantic. How can people live with that? It says here, by comparison, iron deficiency is rare in men, and it's often a symptom of an underlying health condition like internal bleeding in the gut. Yeah, that's what my doctor thinks I have, and I have to get a colonoscopy and an endoscope so they can, you know, they use that scope to look up my endo, and they're going to look around in there, and if they can't find what they think is bleeding, they're going to get one of those high-tech pills that has a camera in it, and they'll shove that down my throat and see, and it'll take pictures of my insides, and they'll see if there's bleeding in there. I don't know. Thinking right now, I think I might have had iron deficiency anemia when I was a kid. Maybe it's because I'm just such a girl. And right about now, I think it's time for us to do a station break. This is WBAI New York, 99.5 FM, broadcasting from a transmitter and antenna atop 4 Times Square, going through a new studio somewhere in downtown Brooklyn and originating in our living room somewhere else in Brooklyn. The program is back of the book. My name is R. Paul Martin. She is Radio's Pickles of the North, and you can find out more by going up to my website at glib.com, glib.com. You can also go to the official website of this radio station at wbai.org. On this program, we've talked about disasters that happen and things that could basically be very bad for the human species on this planet. For instance, we've discussed rogue black holes, which are black holes that don't have a companion, and they're really hard to detect if they don't have an accretion disk around them. And you can get a smaller black hole that doesn't weigh all that much. And if it has an accretion disk, it might not have a big one, but it will still be something that would be bad to have enter the solar system, because if something like that were to crash into the Earth or just sort of get close to it, oh, boy, that would be very, very bad. And we've described, you know, the possibility that something like that could bleed off the atmosphere of the planet. Plus, of course, there's the fact that the sun is getting hotter and hotter. Not that noticeable at this point. But in a time between 500 million and 1 billion years from now, the surface of the Earth will be so hot that there may not be anything living on the Earth, because that will get rid of the atmosphere in the oceans. So there's been talk about having the human species migrate, leave the planet Earth. And this is a science fiction thing you read a lot about. Variously, people have faster-than-light spaceships. They have starships that go off, and people would proliferate throughout the galaxy, if not the whole universe. And then you've got other science fiction stories where the people are in what are called generation ships, which is just a ship that cannot go faster than the speed of light, but can be boosted up to a high speed and has a whole lot of people in it, and generation after generation lives in that ship, and it's being sent out to another star system where people hope there's a planet they can live on. So we have all of these things. Well, there's an article in a recent Scientific American by Sarah Scholes, and the article is entitled "Why We'll Never Live in Space." Oh my, oh my. And she makes some points we've brought up in the past about this particular thing. And, you know, if you go into space, it's not like being on Earth. We've evolved to be on the Earth. And she says, the cancer risk from cosmic rays and the problems that human bodies experience in microgravity could be deal breakers on their own for people living in space, because the radiation flux at space can be huge. She also said there may not be a viable economic case for sustaining a presence on another world. Now, if it's a thing of we have to get the population off the planet or there won't be any people anymore, bleep the economics. But the radiation stuff is true. And she notes the experiment that was done years ago called Biosphere 2. Biosphere 1 is the planet Earth. So some people set up this greenhouse that people would live in. And it was sealed off from things. And it was supposed to be self-sufficient. And the people would be behaving as if they were on Mars, because nobody would be going in to do things with them. And the they had crops growing, which were supposed to recycle the carbon dioxide and make oxygen. And they had all sorts of things set up to make this a habitable place where people would be confined. Of course, they had 1G gravity, because there's nothing you can do about that. You can wall off the sky and everything else. They also had Earth sunlight coming into it to grow the plants, because what plants are going to grow? Well, first of all, they could have just had it completely sealed and have lighting up there of a solar type, but significantly dimmer, such as what you would get on Mars. But what plants do we have that would grow on Mars? Well, probably zero that they could eat and that would do enough photosynthesis to keep the oxygen levels up. And, well, Biosphere 2 became notorious because after a short while they had to cheat. They had to pump in oxygen and scrub out the carbon dioxide mechanically, and they had to do all sorts of things to keep it from becoming a total toxic nightmare that killed everybody. Plus, the people involved in it, shall we say, got on each other's nerves. So it was rather a disaster that showed there's no place like home. And so that was the experience with Biosphere 2. And in the article, Ms. Scholes continues, spaceflight damages DNA, changes the microbiome, disrupts circadian rhythms, impairs vision, increases the risk of cancer, causes muscle and bone loss, inhibits the immune system, weakens the heart, and shifts fluids toward the head, which may be pathological for the brain in the long term. Researcher Sonia Schrepfer at University of California, San Francisco, has done research. She uses mice floating within the International Space Station, and she's revealed that blood vessels leading to the brain get stiffer in microgravity. And she says this is part of why today's astronauts can't simply walk out of their capsules once they return to Earth. Of course, their muscles also atrophy, even though they do a great deal of exercise to keep them from getting too bad. And she also says the immune system is aging quite fast in microgravity. It says here, when astronauts spend a month or more in space, their eyeballs flatten. One aspect of a condition called spaceflight-associated neuroocular syndrome, which can cause long-lasting damage to eyesight. Bones and muscles are built for life on Earth, which involves the ever-present pull of gravity. And the article continues, in space, without a force to push against, astronauts can experience bone loss that outbone growth, and their muscles shrink. The thing is, though, radiation is a really big thing that you can't do a lot about because, yeah, maybe you can do something with some of the other biological things. Maybe you can spin people around and give them a force, you know, or maybe they can take some pills for some of the other things. But radiation in space is very serious. Both the sun and the Earth have magnetic fields, and the sun, its magnetic field actually helps to keep the amount and ferocity of cosmic rays down for the planet Earth, because we're close enough to the sun that the magnetic field is seriously there for these subatomic particles coming in from interstellar space and intergalactic space. And so the sun's magnetic field plays a role, and the Earth's magnetic field plays a big role in dealing with the solar wind. The solar wind is a flood of particles that comes off the sun, a lot of protons coming at high speed, and they come at you, and oh boy, you don't want to have protons crashing through you, because not only is it a particle that's sort of like a bullet going through your cells and crashing into your DNA, but it also has an electric charge, and it can do chemical things inside the cell and to your DNA. And so they've looked at the radiation, and it's very, very difficult. And Dorit Dunoviel, a professor at the Baylor College of Medicine and director of the Translational Research Institute for Space Health, says your DNA could get damaged, and that could make you very, very sick and give you actual radiation syndrome. So besides the solar radiation, which is always there, you could also be in space, because none of these things, we can't go faster than light. So if you're going to say just go to Mars, you're going to be in a spaceship. And how long is it going to take? If it's very, very fast, months. Otherwise, it might take up to 2 years to get to Mars from the Earth. And what happens then is, besides the routine solar radiation, what if there's a solar flare while you're in transit? Solar flares can deliver quite a bit of radiation into the solar system. And depending on where the solar flare is aimed, you're liable to have one that's aiming its main force at you, and that's bad. And then there are coronal mass ejections, which are bigger than solar flares. That's a big chunk of the sun coming off all at once, and a magnetic field throwing off all of this plasma, which is full of subatomic particles that are heated to tremendous heats. And we talked on the air about the Carrington event in 1859 that hit the Earth. And we also talked about a very large coronal mass ejection, which was 10 times larger than the Carrington event. If the Carrington event itself was duplicated and hit the Earth now, it would fry everything. Say goodbye to the internet. internet to the satellites to just about everything we use. Anything that uses semiconductors is going to get fried by the electromagnetic pulse of that. So if you're in a spaceship going somewhere, you know, you could try and put shielding on the outside of it, but if you've got this big lead spaceship, it's going to be hard to move it around and maneuver it. They're also talking about a spaceship where you pump a lot of water into the hull. Yeah, and the water will help to protect a bit, but not enough. And you also have the fact you would have to have a real separation between where the crew is and where the engines are, because otherwise, if you just have it like a rocket now, where the engine is at the back of everything, and then you have immediately after that the place where the people are, well, the radiation is going to enter through the ass end of the rocket and come and get you. So, yeah, water could help a bit, but if you have enough radiation coming out of the sun one day, you're probably going to get killed in that thing. Not to mention the fact that there are cosmic rays that come in, and we talked at one point here about an explosion that happened, I think it was 3 billion years ago, and it was strong enough that it actually physically ruffled the Earth's outer atmosphere. Now, for something to travel 3 billion light years and ruffle the atmosphere of the Earth, that's damned powerful. And, of course, our magnetic field helped us out, and all of that atmosphere helped us out. But if you're in a spaceship, you ain't going to have a whole lot helping you out. And so the article continues, and Dorit Donoville says, so astronauts are exploring the surface of the moon and there is a solar particle event coming, we probably have the capability of predicting it within about 20 to 30 minutes max. So on the moon, they would be able to drill down and make a bunker, and that would protect them somewhat. They could, again, probably bring lead up there or something and just dig down deep and have a lot of moon over them. But they can't get more than 20 or 30 minutes away from their bunker because there might be a solar flare, and oh boy, you're in trouble. And the galactic cosmic rays are very fast moving. They're mostly hydrogen, which is another, just a proton, but also every natural substance in the periodic table makes up cosmic rays. So you could have an iron nucleus, the nucleus of an iron atom coming at you, and you're not going to be able to do much about it because it's going to be traveling at something close to the speed of light, and that's going to hurt. And Dorit Donoville says, we really cannot fully shield astronauts from them. And that's true. So, oh boy, there's a real downer here on the idea that we're ever going to get off this planet in a meaningful way. And they also are, in the article, she also says, is going to Mars going to be equivalent to torture, because you're going to be locked in with the same people all the time. You're going to have a hard time managing air. You're going to have to manage water. You're going to have to hope, because Mars has really no effective magnetic field. You're going to have to deal again with more of this radiation. And also they talk about contaminating the other places in the universe. And we don't want to contaminate the moon and Mars, but there's also something called backward contamination where we bring back something from there. Oh boy. You also get a mutation of something humans already have that's mutated by these subatomic particles hitting it. and people could bring that back to the Earth. Oh, lovely. So, yeah, I don't think we're going to Mars anytime soon.
At this point, I should say that this is WBAI New York. The program is Back of the Book. He is R. Paul Martin, and I am Radio's Pickles of the North.
Yes, here we are. Hobos playing harmonicas on the train. What train is this? Why, it's the WBAI pitching train. Yes, this is time for the WBAI pitching train, where we beg you for money. WBAI, listener-sponsored, non-commercial radio. We don't do ordinary commercials because we don't do that. We're non-commercial. What we do is we survive by asking you to send us money. How can you do that? You do that by calling 1-212-209-2950 and saying, I want to become a BAI buddy in the name of Back of the Book. And yes, you call up 1-212-209-2950, and the call center will pick up, and you will give them the number of your credit card or debit card, and you will tell them who you are, and you'll tell them how much you want to donate on a monthly basis so you can become a BAI buddy. You can donate $10 a month, $15 a month, $20 a month, more if you have it, and you'll tell them what day of the month you want your credit card or debit card charged, and they will do that for you. So 1-212-209-2950. You can also call that same number, 1-212-209-2950, and make a one-time donation if you please. So we're asking you, please, to give us a call. Give us a call at that number now. And we have some people who have called us. We are not live, unfortunately, so we can't monitor what may be coming in or may not be coming in. But we want to thank David and Seth and Tony and Bettina for having donated to us in the recent past. And join them. Join David and Tony and Seth and Bettina and call 1-212-209-2950 and say, yeah, you want to become a BAI buddy in the name of Back of the Book, or do a one-time donation for everything. 1-212-209-2950. Please give us a call. Give the call center a call at that number. You know, we do the science stuff. You don't hear about this thing of, well, that article certainly throws cold water on the idea of easily getting off Earth and going to Mars. Leon Scum, known to some by his alias Elon Musk, I'm going to Mars. I'm going to send people. He's not going. He's sending other people. They're all going to die. And really, and he's claiming he's going to do that. He can send up a rocket into near Earth orbit stuff. If he can get things going to Mars, he's not going to be able to shield the people in there from the radiation. So I don't think he's going to go too far. 1-212-209-2950. This article really throws a lot of cold water on that. And we talked about other things. We talk about science things that you don't generally hear elsewhere. And we talk about many things that you don't hear elsewhere. These overnight programs, they are unique, and there are financial problems in BAI and Pacifica, and people have proposed to replace the overnight programs with programs from somewhere else. Who knows where else? Maybe another radio station, maybe some political group. Who knows what it is? Midnight to 6 a.m. would actually not be BAI programming. That's the other way to make money. If we get enough people calling in 1-212-209-2950 and pledging and sending us money, we can avoid that, and we can keep the overnights here and keep WBAI on the air. Again, 1-212-209-2950. Please call that number now. It will really help us. That's been it for Back of the Book for this week. Coming up next is...
Everything Old is New Again, Again, with Mr. David Kenny.
We should be back here next week. And, oh boy, it's going to be, you know, what a time. And, above all, remember what that dreading but getting ready to see a sunset at 4:48 in the afternoon Dormouse said.
Rocking and revolution, and more it's saying no to imperial settler colonialism across the globe, from St. Louis to Palestine, and that revolution will be broadcast on WBAI New York this Saturday, November 4th, from 11 a.m. until 5 p.m. At 11 a.m., we begin with the 15th annual Black People's March on the White House, organized by the Black is Back Coalition for Justice, Peace, and Reparations. It uplifts the theme, Black Power Matters, Down with Colonialism and Black Community Control of the Police. At noon, we move to the National March to Free Palestine, demanding an immediate ending of U.S. aid to Israel, lifting of the siege on Gaza, and a ceasefire. From 4 to 5, we offer a roundtable on Black Palestinian solidarity and its critical role in the liberation of all oppressed peoples with our sister station, WPFW. That's Saturday, November 4th, 11 a.m. until 5 p.m. on Pacifica's WBAI New York, 99.5 FM, and streaming at WBAI.org. Building a better world, one broadcast at a time. It's decades after the Oslo Peace Accord was signed, the first direct Palestinian-Israeli peace agreement.
Let me say to you, the Palestinians, we are destined to live together on the same soil, in the same land.
The Oslo Accord was meant to initiate future peace talks with the goal of a two-state solution.
If we have come this far, through blood, through fear, hatred, how much further can we yet go?
Tune in to the WBAI Playhouse on Sunday at noon when we present the Pulitzer Prize-winning play Oslo by J.T. Rogers.
We, who have come from a land where parents bury their children, we who have fought against you, the Palestinians, we say to you today, in a loud and a clear voice, enough of blood and tears. Enough!
That's the WBAI Playhouse noon on Sunday, right here on listener-sponsored non-commercial WBAI New York.
WBAI's local station board, the Pacifica Foundation Board, responsible for advising local management and operations, is holding its next regular meeting through Zoom on Wednesday, November 8th at 7 p.m. This is the last regularly scheduled monthly LSB meeting before the newly elected LSB members who have been announced are seated on the board in December. Again, the LSB meeting is Wednesday, November 8th at 7 p.m. It includes an opportunity for public comment. The fastest and easiest way to join the meeting is by using the link on the Pacifica calendar at kpftx.org and on the WBAI website, or by calling 929-205-6099. That's 929-205-6099, and entering this meeting ID, 922-457-2995. Again, meeting ID 922-457-2995. And the password is 995, like WBAI's frequency, 99.5. So it's 995-9999. Do you have to contribute to WBAI to access